Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and John O'Bankin, episode 94 for November 5th, 2009. Ganache.
This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much.
It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free Libre and open source software, starring the wonderful John O'Bankin in the red trunks.
Hello. They're not red.
They're not red? They're, okay.
They're more of like a goldish hue.
Too much information. Jono, of course, is the community manager for Ubuntu. He's been very busy lately with Knackered Nitwits, or whatever the new version of Ubuntu is.
Nearly. Karmic Koala, but you know. Maybe we should consider that for the next.
A little ahead. I was a little ahead.
A few releases time. Yes. Knackered Nitwits. Yeah.
How far ahead do you think of the names, the monikers?
About 20 years.
So you got them all out well into the future.
We have no idea.
I love it.
It's always a bit of a game, actually, kind of like everyone tries to predict, and then Mark just, you know, calls me one day and is like, this is what it's going to be.
Oh, Mark decides. Oh, that's cool.
There's
some privileges and power.
He's good at that as well.
He is. You know,
he's good at leading software companies going into space and thinking up these crazy names.
Karmic Koala is a great name.
It is.
I love that. Also, speaking of koalas, our own little teddy bear, Mr. Randall Schwartz. Merlin at Stonehenge.com. Good to talk to you again. And, of course, the man behind the Geek Cruises Newses and our genial host has put together a really great show, as always. Who is our guest, may I ask?
Well, before I talk about our guest, for those that are watching on the live stream, and if you can see the video for this, you'll see that's not my normal
Where's your stained glass behind you?
Yeah. My stained glass is about 2 hours flight north here. I'm down in Burbank, beautiful downtown Burbank. And I actually am supposed to put a plug in because they say, usually I don't get to tell the name of my clients, but my client this time when working for here in Burbank is Yellowbot. They're a big local search company.
And, oh, cool.
I've been hacking ProCut for them for about 8 months now, and so I've worked doing some really cool things that I can't talk about yet. But I am at Yellowbot's headquarters right now, and so this is why the image looks a little bit different than it normally does.
Well, and thanks to Yellowbot for providing you with somewhere to sit and do Floss Weekly.
And let me take a couple hours out of the day.
It's a
daytime schedule here, so it's kind of tough.
Thank you, Yellowbot.
Yes.
Let's give out the URL as long as we're talking.
Yellowbot.com.
All right.
And it's also weblocal.ca in Canada. So it's the same code, the same Perl code. They just skin it differently. So it's exactly the same thing. And maybe soon on the iPhone, too. We'll see.
Oh, very good.
Can I see that? Oh, are they listening? Okay. Speak right into the microphone up here. Yes. There we go. Yeah.
Anything else we want to cover before we bring in our guest or talk about our guest here?
Our guest is really cool. Our guest, this is going to be fun. Rob Savoy is our guest, and he has been the project leader. Not sure if he started it, but he's been the project leader for Ganache. Ganache is an open source clone of Flash. Now, everybody's familiar with Flash. It's the thing that runs the video plays and YouTube and Hulu and things like that. But it's also used for those annoying interfaces on websites. So the problem with that is that Adobe owns that. And so this has been the problem all the time, is that Adobe owns it. It's locked up proprietary code. But the data bytes that go across the wire to get down to the Flash player, you can always look at and try to reverse engineer it. And that's what these guys have done. They've sit and figured out what the format is of the bytes that go to the Flash player and built open source software that does the same thing. So pretty exciting.
That's amazing, yeah.
Well, have it work with Firefox or have it work with other operating systems that Adobe wouldn't necessarily support.
So we've got Rob Savoy on the line from his mountain lair where he's been shoveling snow. You're in the mountains of Colorado, Rob?
Yeah. I'm up about 9,000 feet in the James Peak Wilderness.
Wow. How beautiful. Is it pretty isolated?
Yeah, it's pretty isolated. It's a little hard to get a T1 up here for sure.
But you have a T1?
Yeah, of course.
Wow. That's great. Well, since you like to do mountain climbing and rock climbing, you're in the perfect place for it. Are there other humans in the area?
Oh, yeah. There's, let's see. There's like five other families on this road here, I think.
That's gonna be. But it's perfect for a developer because you can really focus.
Yeah, exactly. And when I need a break, I can go skiing at lunch.
How nice. How nice. Well, I've asked all my questions, the human questions. You guys can ask about the software now.
Rob, tell us about Ganache. Introduce us to the project.
Sure. I mean, basically, Ganache is about a five-year-old project. We're a high-priority project on the Free Software Foundation high-priority project list. And it's basically a 100% free replacement for Adobe Flash.
Wow.
And we've been working on it for many, many, many years, heavily a reverse engineering project and things like that. And people use it commonly for doing YouTube, video sharing sites, and, of course, a lot of other animations. And we're actually really big in, believe it or not, digital signage and small mobile devices and stuff, because we have pretty good power management and stuff like that. And we're right now compatible with Flash 9 and working really hard on Flash 10 compatibility issues.
Now, by reverse engineering, you're actually having to watch the streams that go to a normal Flash player and see what the bytes look like, or are you actually able to like decompile the code of Flash?
There's actually a bunch of free Flash decompilers floating around the internet that we used pretty heavily early on. Back in the earlier days, there weren't any publicly available specifications, which Adobe finally released. So, yeah, initially other people had kind of printed out charts of opcodes and tags, but just kind of knowing what it sort of does isn't like actually knowing what it really does. And so some of the fine points are figuring out weird, obscure behaviors that I don't think anybody really designed. They just sort of, you know, evolved into the software. After a couple of years, you get really good at making really good guesses.
But inevitably, developers have used all of these quirks, and so you have to support them all.
Well, and some of the quirks are just the way the Flash format is. I mean, I'll be honest, having spent a lot of time inside of it, the Flash format is complete crap.
Oh, really?
It's kind of a drag that it's so incredibly... Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a drag that it's so incredibly popular, but the point was, you know, back when we started Ganache is that everybody was going to Flash, and of course YouTube came around, and that kind of really screwed everything, and those of us that don't install proprietary software, other than the fact that I'm sitting here having to use Skype right now, kind of felt like we needed a free alternative so that we could make it run on different devices and different things like that, and so we kind of started the Ganache project.
Well, first of all, I apologize for making you use Skype. we will endeavor to find a good open source alternative. I know there is one, but it's a question of us rejiggering our Windows-based Skype hardware.
I'm writing one right now, so hopefully in a couple of months when I get it finished, it'll come in really handy.
Deal, Rob.
And it's all Flash-based, actually.
Oh, how interesting. But I wonder now, as the open source world moves towards SVG and HTML5, if maybe, you know, you'll finish Ganache, and all of a sudden people won't need Flash anymore.
Well, but see, what you're basically saying is that, I mean, SVG, from what I can gather, doesn't do animations very well. It has, you know, serious performance problems, and maybe they'll get those licked. But as far as I know, that's still a big problem. And HTML5 is only good for video. And believe it or not, our main focus with Flash isn't silly, you know, internet video sharing sites. It's educational software. There's a huge amount of school systems all over the world for things that also use Flash for all sorts of educational purposes. And that's kind of general animation, sometimes not even with video. And stuff is kind of more important to us even than just video. So HTML5, big deal, right? Maybe it'll make YouTube work better without a media player, but you can't really do a whole lot with it. And same thing for SVG. I mean, it's just, I haven't really seen SVG as a replacement to what Flash can do. Flash has got reasonable efficiency and performance because it's such a crappy compressed format.
Actually, a lot of people complain about Flash's inefficiencies and how much CPU it uses, for instance.
Yeah, but try doing this with a bunch of XML files.
Right. Good point.
I mean, by the time you've decompressed it all, I mean, I like XML. It's a really wonderful format for a lot of things. But sometimes people want to apply XML to all sorts of problems that really it's not exactly suitable for. And then people go, oh, XML sucks, which isn't really appropriate. Right. But you're right. Most of the Flash problems are because of the nature of how Flash works. Is it's pretty heavy CPU intensive and things like that. I mean, it pretty much hammers your machine. And we put a lot of energy into performance and hardware accelerated graphics, and we've got some new patches for hardware video decoding and things like that, which is kind of really the only way to kind of make up for it.
Well, ultimately, it sounds like Ganache will be better than Flash.
Well, we would like to think so. You know, sometimes we may not necessarily be as compatible as we would like, but we often have better performance. We have a more of a focus on low-end machines. We're really big on netbooks and stuff like that. And,
right.
I think that unlike Adobe that's got nice new, you know, Quad Xeon boxes on their desktop and stuff, you know, we're sitting here running on OLPCs and MIPS-based netbooks and all sorts of, like, pretty low-end machines, like 400 and 500 megahertz, you know, like the stuff we all worked on 20 years ago.
It was plenty fast then, yeah. No, it's, so, it's true. So I try to run Hulu on a netbook, and it you can't go full screen. Flash just will not do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of people, when they first start hearing about alternative Flash implementations, are surprised when they hear that Flash is actually quite open as a standard. You can read the spec and all the rest of it, and you can implement it. So tell us a little bit more about the standard. Tell us a bit more about the kind of work that you need to go through to build an alternative Flash player.
Well, to be honest, until about a year ago, none of the specs were openly available, and for me to actually get a copy of them would have been a serious licensing problem. So right. Most of the Ganache history, we had no specifications. We wrote our own, which, you know, right or wrong, it was kind of fascinating when the specs came out, and Adobe surprisingly made the licensing rather liberal and is trying to do the right thing in their own silly way. But these specifications are rather high level, and they don't really document obscure behaviors. I mean, one of them is an API list of ActionScript classes. Well, big deal. We all know what ECMAScript looked like, and so that wasn't a big deal. And the other one is mostly like lists of like opcodes and tags, which we had already figured out. But they don't say that if you combine these three things like this, this happens. And that's the actual hard part, is how you tie it all together and how you deal with all these things. And so having the specs open and out there is kind of nice, but for most of what we do in Ganache, it's pretty irrelevant.
And why did they open them? I mean, were they getting increasing pressure from developers such as yourself, Captain Flash, to open these things up?
You know, I lobbied Adobe for several years about opening up their specifications, but I think in their own way, Adobe is attempting to be a open source oriented company, but I don't really think it's because of the open source community. I think it's this thing called Silverlight that actually got their attention.
Yes.
And
right.
I know that the moment Silverlight got announced, suddenly Adobe was like our best friend. So
yeah.
I think that they're feeling competition more from that than anything else. And they've learned that when you make things open and available to people, it makes your stuff have a longer, I guess, reliability. I mean, Silverlight's not really open. You have to still download patented binary blobs from Microsoft to actually make it work. So
right. And when these specs, I mean, this must have really changed the game for you, right? I mean, these specs were opened up. Does that mean that you could, you know, like how when people are talking about the Wine project, which is the free Windows emulation software that runs on Linux, you know, like they've always said, you know, we're like 98% of the way there, but that final 2% is really hard because it's closed. Was it kind of a similar situation with you? I mean, did you get these specs and it was like, this is like Christmas come early kind of thing?
Actually, believe it or not, it made me yawn. As I said, we had actually figured out almost every single thing in the specifications. And so by the time the specs came out, I had already had our own published documentation on our website for like 2 years. So it was kind of irrelevant at that point.
But it did confirm the work you'd done. But I mean, that must have been nice.
Yeah, it confirmed a few things, and we did see some interesting stuff. Some of the more interesting descriptions of various ActionScript stuff where it differed from JavaScript. Until Flash 9, basically, ActionScript and JavaScript, which were supposed to be the same, were actually pretty different. And so when the specs came out, we could spend more time sort of focusing on what those real differences were. And I'll be honest, it was kind of a thrill to actually be able to read the specs and going, wow, this is cool. I'm not going to have a lawyer call me when I'm finished.
Yay. But still have to do clean room development. I mean, just having the specs doesn't free you up, does it? I mean, it doesn't mean now you don't have to still be in clean room. You can't.
Yeah, well, it depends. I mean, you know, the true definition of clean room is there's a lot of types of reverse engineering. You know, for instance, if you look at the FFmpeg project, they spend an awful lot of time disassembling executables and doing a lot of binary blob tricks and stuff while they figure things out. And that's not really clean room. And so with the specifications, it sort of helps us still kind of be clean room, but I don't know. It's just more fun for us to figure it out the way we've been doing it and stuff. And all the specs did is kind of justify that we had actually done pretty good. I was kind of surprised at how close we really were on a few things that we just literally started, you know, guessing.
Yeah.
And so how do you go about, I mean, you know, I, like many people who listen to Floss, I'm kind of like, yeah, I have a fascination with how software is developed, and I'm myself, you know, somewhat of a hobbyist. How do you go about thinking, you know what, you see that thing over there? I'm going to figure out how it works, and I'm going to make an equivalent to it.
And it's a black box. You can't look into it.
Yeah. I mean, how do you go about doing that? Give us a little bit of an insight into what you do when you're hacking on Ganesh.
You know, funny enough, is first you get a really good music collection because you need something that'll help you keep focused on what you're actually doing.
What do you find works well for decompiling and reverse engineering?
You know, funny enough, it depends on the mood of the day, right? Sometimes I want to listen to some really obnoxious techno, and sometimes I want to, like, listen to Carlos Nakai, and sometimes an old Grateful Dead bootleg really works. You just kind of have to have a selection so that at different times when you say, oh, my God, this is ridiculous, you want to go, oh, I'll go put on such and such, and suddenly you get motivated to go back to it. But one of the nice things is that there's only really so many ways a language can work, and having spent, oh my God, I think I spent like 14 years working on GDB, I'm pretty used to looking at how stuff works from the inside out, and I'd never realized that my GDB and GCC experience would be useful, but when you kind of see how things work at the sort of opcode, sort of, you know, executable file format level, you go, oh, I bet I know how this works at the top level, because it's kind of what I did for a long time. And then as you start making progress, you get better and better at guessing it. A lot of the decompilers and stuff that were floating around for older Flash versions also helped a lot, because you could, you know, write a test case. We had free compilers, so we could do Ming. So we wrote a lot of test cases, compiled them, and then decompiled them to say, oh, this is what it really does.
But you're not, when you say decompile, you're decompiling a source a video file, not the source, not the binary blobs. Can you disassemble the binary blobs and look at them? I don't think you want to do that, right?
Well, actually, what we're not talking about is the video file. The video formats are easy. Oh. Flash doesn't do just video. Flash actually is a programming, scripting, animation language like craziness. I mean, until YouTube, most people used Flash for educational games for children. Right. And there's a bunch of video games using Flash. So what we typically did is the Flash format, a Swift file, is an executable file, like a .exe or you know, binary on Linux and stuff like that. And so we typically would disassemble that file and figure out what opcodes did and the tags, and you look at how the registers lay out when you do function calls, and you make function calls work, and then you figure out, oh, this tag says turn on a sound clip, and then you go, oh, okay, I'll turn on a sound clip here. And it's an iterative process. It's kind of slow. It's a bit like climbing a mountain.
You're figuring out how ActionScript works then. Basically.
Yeah, in a sense, much of it is actually buried in how ActionScript actually works. The Flash part is just kind of wrapped around executing ActionScript commands. Right. So, you know, native Flash itself, before Flash 5, really didn't do a whole lot. You could basically do some images and move them around, but you couldn't do anything really complicated. And then basically Adobe took ECMAScript, which is the same standard that JavaScript's based on, and then used that to develop ActionScript so they could do a lot more complicated types of functionality. Because back in the older days, Flash was basically like numbers, strings, pretty simple stuff.
Mm-hmm. How does ActionScript differ from JavaScript then?
Well, in the new versions, they're actually the same, more or less. Most of what the older ActionScript implementations, while I think Adobe spent many, many, many years aiming towards full compatibility, really weren't that compatible. And so much of their work has been kind of catching up with the, ECMA 262 specification that JavaScript's also based on. And a lot of times they would just do things differently, you know. But I can't think of any examples right off the top of my head, so.
One of the things I know that Flash gets used for a lot is obviously the video components, because of the nice universal video players that you can build in Flash. But I also know that it's also the source of almost all of my grief as I'm surfing the web, because everybody builds these really horrible UIs to navigate. I say navigate in air quotes, because getting through somebody's site that's completely gone crazy with Flash is usually nuts. I presume you're supporting all of that too, right?
Well, and funny enough, more so than video, because mind you, you know, we never really pay much attention to video, but you're exactly right. When we really kind of launched the Ganache project, it was them stupid menus used for navigation on websites that actually said, oh my God, we should make this a web browser plugin. When Ganache started, it was a user interface for a digital stereo system. Huh. And its first couple of, in fact, I still have that stereo. It's kind of behind me here in the house. And so most of Ganache's early life was actually user interface technology on embedded devices. And so we never really thought about the web and internet and Firefox plugins until one day an old friend of mine, John Gilmore, said, you know, you got a Flash player. Maybe you should make it a Firefox plugin. And unfortunately, I agreed.
I'm going to see John Gilmore tonight, actually. He and John Perry Barlow are doing a salon in San Francisco. I'll say hi.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I'll see him this weekend myself.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. That's neat. So he was the inspiration for Ganache.
Yeah, basically, because he said, you've got this Flash player, and why don't you make it a Firefox plugin so that navigation and stuff works? And because up till then, those of us that weren't really into binary blobs and proprietary software were kind of left out of the world. And as Randall says, all these websites were doing simple stuff, but I couldn't even get the menus to work. And so, you know, you spend a lot of time, oh, you dump the source code. Oh, look, here's the URL that I wanted to go to. What a pain in the neck. And John's like, well, you should take this Flash thing and make it a Firefox plugin.
Sure, easy, easy. No problem.
Yeah, really, the lack of documentation on how to write Firefox plugins is a little daunting. Lots of stuff on extensions,
really?
Not a whole lot on plugins.
Oh,
and then try doing a multi-threaded OpenGL backend plugin for Firefox. Blah. But anyway, I did actually beat it into functionality. And at that moment, I got thrown from being a systems engineer to being, I guess, a desktop graphics engineer, which some days I still regret because the bug reports I get these days are like very, very different than what I used to do when I worked at Cygnus, that's for sure.
Yeah, so what do you see as the future? I mean, you mentioned netbooks, and it sounds like Ganache is far more efficient than the Adobe official player. Do you see the future as things like netbooks and kind of low-power environments?
Yeah, we're still putting a lot of focus into sort of lower-end, you know, netbook-type environments. A lot of people have a hard time programming those kinds of devices because they don't have good graphics, they're kind of slow, you have to do a lot of software rendering and things like that. But a lot of actually what I'm working on lately is I've been working on the server side of Flash, along with the Flash player, of course. Adobe has a thing called the Adobe Media Server, which I also reverse engineered, and I'm finishing up my own implementation of, and hope to be writing my own video conferencing software on top of the Ganache, you know, server combination that we're working on. So that's kind of what I'm putting a lot of work into there, kind of along with performance and things like that.
Right. And is this, I mean, this is, you have a company, right, that's behind some of this work. Are you monetizing Ganache, or how's it work?
Yeah, I wish. Basically, we have a nonprofit foundation called openmedianow.org, and most of the funding for the Ganache project for the last 4 or 5 years has basically run through Open Media Now. We're currently broke. I'll put in the fundraising plea since you gave me the opportunity. But all this money that we've raised from various people, like John and Bob Young and Mark Shuttleworth and other individuals and things like that, is all pretty much gone to trying to let the Ganache developers work more focused and more full time, because doing a Flash player is a huge project. I mean, it's a lot of complicated, slow, tedious work, and it's kind of hard for people to do it part-time and working other jobs, which is kind of where we've wound up lately. So,
right.
We've got an official nonprofit so that people can, if they donate money, and they can get a tax write-off, all that good stuff, and then all the money goes right to Ganache. Since we don't have an office, we don't have real overhead, it's mostly, because without funding, we wind up having to do other jobs to pay our bills, which means we don't work on Ganache as much as we would like.
It looks like you do have an office. I mean, behind you, it looks like you're sat in a cave. I mean, maybe I was wondering whether you
it's
maybe
just dark. I don't think it's actually a cave.
You guys said use a dark background. So no, actually, right behind me is my wood stove and a brick wall. But my office is in my living room, and pretty much all the Ganache developers more or less work at home: bedrooms, living rooms, spare rooms, all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. So I mean, you said that you're getting some funding from you mentioned Bob Young and Mark Shuttleworth and people like that. Are you finding that like large contributions are still keeping the project afloat? Are you really looking to floss viewers and listeners to, you know, to pledge $10, $20 here and there?
You know, there's a point where you can't keep hitting up your friends for money. it's sort of like a really bad business model and things like that. And I know that the economy has hurt a lot of people right now. We've basically seen over the last year that most of our funding is pretty much dried up, which is, I guess, just a fact of life in a rough economy and stuff. And in fact, right now, we don't have any funding at all. So, wow.
Even though you're a high priority Free Software Foundation, high priority project.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Free Software Foundation. Yeah, they don't really support us.
I was going to say, did they give you any money? Did they give you any? They got tons of money, surely.
Well, to be honest, I'd have to ask Richard. But no, the Free Software Foundation actually does not financially really support any projects. Their main goal in life is kind of political advocacy and campaigns. Right now, they're doing a membership fundraising campaign, by the way, and stuff. And most of the money that the FSF raises goes to encouraging people's education about free software and a lot of the issues that they feel, you know, really concerned about, like why websites shouldn't use Flash, for instance, is yet another campaign they've got. Right. So, they don't really directly help us at all so much. We've spent a bunch of time trying to work with some corporations that use Ganache, but the problem is that because it's free software, people just use it. Right. And none of the corporations, and there's quite a few right now shipping Ganache on their hardware, we don't get a single, you know, dime from that. That's life as a free software developer, I guess.
So go to openmedianow.org and press the donate button, kids.
So that's an interesting question. Why would the Free Software Foundation say not to use Flash? Is it just because not to use the actual Adobe Flash or not to use the Flash language? I mean, what's the beef there?
Well, basically, the beef is almost like what you said. Flash was kind of taking over, and because there were no free versions, and to be honest, Adobe Flash really only runs on Intel architectures. And for a long time, it actually only ran on Windows and Macintoshes. And as many people know, the sort of Linux versions of Adobe Flash until pretty recently were pretty poor. And so long before Ganache came around, they had a campaign to try and convince people to stop using Flash. That obviously didn't work very good. And then even after we got Ganache working, because we're still, you know, chasing the compatibility curve, they've still kind of encouraged people to, you know, not use Flash. And if you have to use Flash, please at least test it with Ganache to make sure that, you know, us, those of us in the sort of free software fanatic world can still, you know, look at their Flash.
Yeah, the other thing wrong with Flash is all sorts of security issues with Flash. Have you paid attention to those with Ganache, things like Flash cookies, and how do you preserve compatibility without preserving the security issues?
You know, funny enough, we get great glee every time we see a security report on Adobe Flash, because funny enough, Ganache doesn't actually have almost any of the same security problems, because most of them aren't really a bug of the format. It's more of a bug of the implementation. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, Flash cookies, I don't know if you – I mean, I've examined thousands of Flash cookies and stuff like that, and we actually added support in Ganache for reading those and things like that. So one of the things you can do in Ganache is you can say, well – you know, we can basically tag it, like, do you really want to write this Flash cookie? For instance, we also have other utility programs that let you dump all the data that's in your Flash cookies and make sure that you have it. We have other support for making them read-only. Sometimes some websites use Flash cookies to give you certain information and things like that. But they're kind of actually scary, because you can actually embed executable code in these things. And that's a potential huge security violation that I'm actually quite impressed that nobody's actually found. And I found some other pretty serious security problems in Adobe Flash, right, some of which scare the crap out of me.
Really?
If your bank uses Flash-based user interface software, which I know some banks do, find another bank.
Oh, boy. Well, many banks use Flash cookies because they know people will blast out the browser cookies, so they figure, well, we can hide them here. I hope that's not a security flaw.
No, and you can store anything in a Flash cookie. I mean, as I said, executable code, subroutines, right, all sorts of amazing stuff. And I've examined thousands of these things and not really seen anything scary, but that's just what I've looked at, right? The potential is really there. And there's a few other things in Flash which I could probably eat up 3 hours talking about, but there's a bunch of other communication schemes that are way actually worse than Flash cookies. I mean, I've even had programs where I could inject my own communications in between Flash movies playing and change the data as it was flowing through in an untraceable manner. There's some pretty scary stuff you do when you're really into it.
Wow. Now, there's of course, Ganache is one of a couple of free Flash implementations, and the other fairly well-known one is SwiftDeck. How do the two projects differ, and Why should we choose Gnash?
Well, I mean, for one thing, the SwiftDeck maintainer basically announced last year at LinuxConf in Australia that he was basically stopping work on it, and I don't believe they've done a release since almost last December. Right. And so as far as I know, SwiftDeck, unless other maintainers jump into it, has kind of plateaued out and stuff. That may change. But funny enough is actually the SwiftDeck maintainer spends a lot of time on the Gnash IRC channel. We talk about reverse engineering issues pretty frequently, or at least we used to, you know, a while back, because it let us separate out implementation bugs from reverse engineering bugs. We could say, oh, I think it works like this. And he could go, oh, I think it works like this. And we'd try a few things. And then we'd both go, oh, this is how it works. And so having two separate implementations was actually very, very useful. And I mean, I wish right. SwiftDeck, you know, the best of luck and stuff. But I think when it comes down to it, Gnash is actually moving forward faster and in many, many different directions. SwiftDeck was primarily focused on video sharing sites, and Gnash is actually focused more on being a general purpose Flash player than just doing, you know, video sharing.
Right. Gotcha. Just moving on a little bit, you mentioned earlier on Cygnus, you know, you spent some time with Cygnus, and you also spent some time with NASA, I believe. How did you kind of get into the route that you got into so far? I mean, it sounds like you came from, like, in some ways, maybe a traditional software development background, and now you're working pretty much full time in an open source project. How did you get here?
Well, funny enough is my real background was industrial programming. I used to do a lot of automation work and robotics and things like that back in the 70s and stuff. And at one point I needed a compiler, so I wound up working on GCC basically in GDB because we couldn't afford compilers to do programming for our own automation lines and stuff. Then I got pulled into Cygnus back in the early days because nobody else wanted to work on GDB, which I always thought debuggers were kind of fascinating. I eventually wound up at NASA after Cygnus was sold to Red Hat and stuff because NASA, believe it or not, are big Linux fans and they use GCC pretty much everywhere. And when Cygnus stopped doing, when Cygnus got sold, there was nobody they could really turn to for compiler, debugger, kernel support. So they wound up dragging me in, and I spent a whole bunch of years there playing with free software and flying airplanes. It was kind of fun.
So what did you work on at NASA? Did you work on GCC there?
Yeah, I actually primarily worked on GCC, and I built a whole bunch of big superclusters and a lot of compiler bugs, and sometimes I'd fix software bugs and air traffic control software that they thought were compiler bugs, but I'd say, no, this is an implementation bug. It's not a compiler bug, and I basically helped kind of
stabilize
the entire...
Yeah, really. Those must fly a lot.
We really appreciate it. Whatever bug.
Well, yeah, believe it or not, every time you get in an airplane, you're actually flying on... basically most of the U.S. Air traffic control system runs on Red Hat Enterprise right now.
Yeah.
And all of the,
all
of the radar systems and weather analysis and everything else is all running on big Linux clusters and stuff now. And everybody's using GCC. So
I feel much better now.
I'd hope so. Yeah. When people used to say, oh, Linux isn't good for mission critical software, I just laugh because... Yeah. I always go, wow, do you ever fly in an airplane? And it was kind of fun. And I primarily just kept the development infrastructure working. And every time they wanted to build some weird cluster, hey, why don't you try Debian on the Itanium? They'd always drag me into it, and I'd beat my head against the wall for a couple of months.
Wow. So, I mean, you started out with Fortran. You worked on GCC. You worked in GDB. You worked at Cygnus. Worked at NASA. My question to you is there anything that's too hardcore for you? You're like the most badass developer in the world. I mean, is there anything that scares you about technology? Tell me it's Facebook.
Facebook.
Yeah, funny enough, I don't have a Facebook account, and I probably never will. No, I mean, I think the funniest thing that ever happened to me was I got a phone call last year from one of these agencies with three initials in their name, and they asked me some questions about some software, and my exact response was, oh my god, you deployed that?
Oh dear.
Oh, wow. Was it KFC?
Yeah, KFC. Mission critical fryers. Very, very risky. Yeah.
Wow.
This thing could blow.
Something like that.
Yeah. No, that's interesting.
But no, I mean, you know, I like to have fun with software, and often for me, my idea of fun is being thrown in completely over my head. So I guess I've accomplished that pretty well.
Okay, I've got to ask, Emacs or VI?
You're going to hate this answer. I use both all the time. I use Emacs pretty much religiously for all my programming because it handles multiple files. And I use VI, which is kind of what I initially used for my first 15 years as a programmer, for all my quick and dirty file editing. So I kind of go back and forth pretty seamlessly. And there are certain things you can do in VI that you can't do in Emacs, believe it or not. But Emacs is pretty nice.
I think you're going to say that, you know, both of those are too easy for you and you use a screwdriver or something.
Yeah, papyrus.
Yeah, it's like I had a friend of mine who thought he was too efficient at work, so he wrote a command shell in M4.
Oh, great. That's funny.
Yeah, exactly. So,
he lost most of our listeners who don't know what M4 is, but that's okay.
Huh?
I said he lost most of our listeners that don't know what M4 is.
What's M4?
M4 is the world's worst macro replacement language, heavily used in the GNU auto tools. So anytime you have to program autocom for automake and all these nasty things, you wind up learning all about the joys of M4.
And send me
out. It's one of the main gripes against programming auto tools.
Yep. That sounds like a fate worse than a fate worse than death.
So somebody's got to still write the configure scripts.
Yeah. Somebody's got to do it. That's right.
So I hear that another side of your life, Rob, is the Rainbow Family of Living Light. Can you tell us what that is?
Oh, boy, yeah. Let's see. Among other things, I maintain the website, www.welcomehome.org. And rainbow gatherings have been going on in the United States since 1972. They happen in different national forests and stuff every year. And it's kind of an outgrowth, so to speak, of Woodstock and the countercultural movements and things like that. But it's a very, very sort of back to nature kind of thing. And funny enough, at rainbow gatherings, everything is free. And this is one of the things that actually motivated me to get heavily into free software. And rainbow gatherings were great fun for the first 20 years until we started having problems with these guys called the federal government. But I still do that, and we still do it every year.
So you kind of, is it like a, like, kind of a, like, I don't want this to sound derogatory, but like a big hippie fest, people get together and just hang
out. What's wrong with hippies?
Nothing.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah, exactly. You know, as an old deadhead. But yeah, to a large degree, it's got a lot of music. We basically call Rainbow Gatherings the world's largest intentional community, and it exists for about 1 week every year, and it often has sometimes up to 20 and 25,000 people, and there's free food for everybody. We do free medical care. Everything is pretty much taken care of, and it's a fascinating experiment in how people really can live if they work really hard on cooperating, and a lot of what we do at Rainbow Gatherings, as I said, is what really influenced me to be a free software developer and work with people and do community-based projects.
Right on. I think that's great.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. We've had some rainbow gatherings around here, I believe, in Northern California.
Yep, in Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon.
Yep, Northern California. We were there a couple years ago.
Yep.
So I was there.
Very cool.
So what's next for Ganache? What do you still see as big problems ahead of you? And are you caught up yet with where Adobe is with the latest release of Flash, or we still have a bit of a gap there?
Well, our biggest thing right now is, of course, working on Flash 9 and Flash 10 compatibility. We actually just today made a big, big source code check-in that kind of pushes us pretty much farther along on getting truly compatible. But like as I said, we have specifications, but they don't really detail the sort of gory stuff. And Flash 9 and 10 are very, very different formats than the older versions, so it's kind of almost like starting over. So our current focus is a lot on compatibility, because unless we stay compatible, suddenly all the websites stop working. So that's been a real big push on that we've been working on. We developed an ActionScript 3 library this summer, which was another new thing. And so we're putting a lot of focus with what time we have left into the compatibility issue. But this is a problem where if you can work on it, it's really hard to do this work. If you drop it for a week, you look at it and you go, wow, what was I thinking last week about how this actually worked? But we've been making good progress, just slow and steady. Kind of like
wine. I also understand that Wearing my Linux Fund hat for a second, I understand that Linux Fund actually helped promote a couple of features in Ganache. Are you familiar with what funding we provided?
The Linux Fund is attempting to raise money to fix some issues in Ganache, typically performance-related, mostly focused on OpenStreetMap support, which we support the OpenStreetMap Flash-based editor and stuff. But we're still waiting for the Linux Fund to raise the amounts that they had talked about for getting those projects started. But, you know, at this point, hey, we appreciate the help. We're glad other people out there think trying to raise funding for Ganache is a good thing. And hopefully one of these days they'll get to the sort of minimum level for that work to actually start. It's more task-based and stuff than what we usually do. But they, I believe they've also had a very rough year. This has been a pretty bad year for free software projects in general.
Yeah, part of the problem was the credit card company switched on us last year, and everybody that had the old credit card still thinks they're contributing. They aren't. They have to get the new credit card, so that's part of the problem. And just been a down year for all sorts of donations as well.
Yep.
So what CPUs does Ganache run on? Does it run on everything that you can compile C for or whatever the thing's written in?
Well, you know, conveniently, having been a GCC developer, yeah, Ganache runs on pretty much anything that's ever showed up in my house here, basically. Our primary platforms are, of course, Intel. MIPS, we're really big on MIPS-based netbooks out of China, Longsoon, and the new Gideons and stuff like that. We run on PowerPC still. We have full 64-bit support, always have, without much trouble. Never could figure out why it took Adobe so long to get 64-bit Flash Player, but whatever. I guess they had Ganache to look at, which probably helped. We're big on ARM. And things like that. And we've pretty much run on, I mean, Ganache runs in the Itanium. It runs on the UltraSpark. It's not hard to write portable software when you use GCC that runs on everything.
How about the ARM?
Yeah, it runs on ARM really good.
So you could actually have a Flash Player on the iPhone without draining the battery?
Yeah, actually, I already did that once, and then Apple kept bricking my telephone, so I gave up. So instead, I did an Android port a couple months ago as a slightly better ARM-based platform.
Ah, interesting.
Which I like Android way better than the iPhone. There's a lot. I mean, there's some things Google does with Android to make it almost impossible to program in C++ because they really want you to use Java. But when you're a C++ compiler developer, you make those things work.
That's awesome. Are you going to release a C++ compiler for Android?
Actually, I already did. It's on ganachedev.org. Go into the wiki and dig around, and you can find a full C++ toolchain for Android, complete with Boost and most of the dependent libraries
That's
that Google
great.
Doesn't ship.
How handy. That's really good to know. Not that I'll be using it, but that's...
And not only that, it uses the native C library with Android out of the SDK instead of the sort of new lib code sorcery style. So basically, if you have software that can deal with the phone functions, it should actually work correctly.
I would think this would be a big opportunity for you is running on these small devices that Flash doesn't run on at all or doesn't run well on. I would think that these companies should be coming to you.
We thought so too, but unfortunately it hasn't really happened. We run on the OpenMoco. We run on the old Trolltech Green phone. We ran on the Access Linux platform phones, the Lips phones, Limo phones. I've done ports to a dozen cell phone companies.
Wow.
And then they disappear. And they don't, you know, we get it working, the performance is good, the battery life is better, and then they go sign big deals with Adobe typically because I think large monopolies support other large monopolies.
Right. It's just a mindset.
And being a GPL project scares them off pretty efficiently, too.
Yeah. That's too bad. That's a good...
So what resources are you looking for? What kind of... Are you looking for more programmer support, more people to hack code with you?
Well, yeah, we would like to because when our funding basically dried up, almost everybody had to go pay their bills and find real work. And so we're kind of down to two of us right now, which has really slowed things down. And there's a lot of companies that could really benefit, I believe, by Ganache. And we just as soon have donations of engineering time and engineers working with us on sort of mutual goals as much as we'd like real funding and stuff. Pretty much anything that pushes Ganache forward is good with us. So, and we've been seeing some of this. Our hardware video decoding support was just donated by Splitted Desktop France. So we can do, we're doing full screen MPEG-4 last month at like 12% CPU load. Eat that, Adobe. But,
I think that's 100% from Adobe, for sure.
Yeah, but we would love to see more engineers working with the Ganache project. For people that aren't really developers, we really like good quality bug reports. We would actually like to find more real Flash developers that aren't really necessarily C++ developers to help us work on better test cases, because we do almost all of our work through test cases as opposed to having to use, you know, somebody's closed source, you know, Flash file and things like that. So there's a lot of different ways people can really help us. Documentation. I wrote all of our documentation, so of course it completely sucks. So we'd really love to have people, you know, clean up our reference and user manuals and things like that. But we'd really like to have more engineering time. And more funding would be really nice, too, because I'd really like to continue working on Ganache full-time instead of having to go back to consulting for a living.
Yeah. Do you have open documentation for the actual ActionScript format, or is that you just relying on other sources for that?
We actually had our own open ActionScript documentation for a really long time, but when Adobe finally released all their specifications and had reasonably flexible licensing terms to where we felt that it was safe to actually read them, at that point, there was really no need to maintain our sort of reverse engineered version of which. And so what we've got now is we actually have often documentation for some of the ActionScript classes about obscure behaviors and things like that that none of the specifications cover, because the ActionScript specs right now are pretty much an API documentation. You know, here's a function call and here's the parameters, but it doesn't really say a lot. So we often try to document the more obscure stuff that nobody's written down. But there's a lot of people that have put energy into documenting Flash, not really us.
Cool.
Well, I wish you luck. If people want to support the Ganache project, I guess the best thing to do would be to go to the Ganache webpage and press the donate button. What's that URL again?
Well, we've got a developer's website, ganachedev.org, which is mostly, you know, developer stuff. And the nonprofit that we've been using is called openmedianow.org. And we're a nonprofit here in the United States, and that's sort of been the primary funding organization for Ganache, along with a few other nonprofits like the Triangle Fund and PubSoft and things like that. And we have a PayPal account and all that kind of junk.
Yep. Press the buttons. Make the donation. Openmedianow.org. Mm-hmm. Well, don't get snowed in too bad. I guess if you live up there, you must like to get snowed in.
You know, believe it or not, when you live way up here on a dirt road, you actually don't get snowed in. You just wind up having lots of snow to deal with. But
yeah, I guess you're in. It's just, you're there anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the joke around here is that some people join health clubs and the rest of us just keep our driveways clear.
A little cheaper that way, yeah.
Rob, great, very great to meet you. I really look forward to seeing what's next for Ganache and Open Media Now. I think it's a very important project. We thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks a lot.
And
thanks
please,
a lot, Rob.
Please keep us up to date on your VoIP project, because that sounds interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's an unfunded project, but my hope is to hopefully sometime after the beginning of the year to unleash a Flash-based video conferencing solution. I've done most of the hard reverse engineering, including Adobe's RTMP protocols, two years of staring at hex dumps. So we're kind of getting to the point now where I'm just fine-tuning the network engine for better performance for multiple clients.
Boy, that'd be great. It'd be SIP, I presume, SIP compatible and all of that.
Actually, it supports multiple protocols.
Oh, great.
So the idea is that it can do a bunch of different stuff, including actually doing video conferencing over HTTP.
Wow. Wow.
For tunneling and stuff like that.
Yeah, right. We could use that.
They're using that for this.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you, Rob.
That would be the idea.
Yeah, well, and with Skype being encumbered, although I guess they say they might open source it, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And all of the real guts of Skype is going to still be proprietary binary blobs.
Yeah. So we do need a replacement. Thanks, Rob.
All right.
Great to talk to you. Take care.
Okay.
Well, that was very interesting. There's something about reverse engineering that's just fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, it's like everything about forward engineering, but in reverse. So you have to do everything as hard as you do forward, but I mean, you're having to make it act like something else. So it is a bit tricky, and it's sort of like it's like holding up the box at Christmas, you know, just shake it, and you're kind of going, what's in the box?
There's high stakes involved, because if you don't do it, you know, cleanly, you can get sued.
Or it just won't work, and it won't work in enough cases, and that would be a problem too. So that's also that would be a big issue.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Really, really interesting. I like that he looked the part of the old grizzled hacker wizard guy. That was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
I don't look that so it's really great.
Oh yeah, definitely.
the thing about Rob as well is he's come to a bunch of Ubuntu developer summits, and whenever he walks around, you know, he always dresses like a full on cowboy. I mean, he's got he wasn't wearing the hat, but he wears the hat, and then he's got like the leather trousers and the leather jacket and everything, and he's just a cool guy. The thing I like about him is that to me he's like the epitome of the open source hacker. He's got such a good heart, and you know he really throws both feet into making the software available to everybody, every one of us. I just think it's a really remarkable story that it's been through.
Very cool.
Now, so, you had a big launch, didn't you, Jono?
Yeah, we released Karmic.
Since we talked last, the latest version of Ubuntu 9.10?
9.10, yeah.
Yep.
So it's now out in the wilds and it seems to be going down well. So, yep, I'm really happy with it, and the team seems pretty happy with it as
It's a six-month release schedule, is that what it is?
Yeah, every 6 months.
It seems like, boom, 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 it's a new one.
A lot goes into each cycle.
Are there goals for what's... How does that come about, where the goals are for what's going to be the next version? What are we going to do differently? How does that happen?
So in a nutshell, what we do is... each cycle we have an Ubuntu Developer Summit. So the next one's in just over a week in Dallas. And we get together as a project. We have 7 tracks. And each of the platform... So I'm one of the platform managers at Canonical. Each of the platform managers runs a track. And then the community... We sponsor a bunch of people from the community along to UDS. And basically what we do is we decide and discuss what's going to go into the next version of Ubuntu at UDS. And that generates a bunch of specifications. And then based on those specifications, the community works and Canonical works on Ubuntu. We definitely have some ideas. I mean, you know, Mark has some ideas about what he'd like to do. Various members of the community, various members of Canonical have ideas. And it kind of all melds together. And the next version is what we call an LTS, which means long-term support, which means that we support it for 5 years. So this is kind of like... we're usually a little bit more kind of reserved for an LTS because the focus is really bug fixing, stabilization. You know, these are really designed for like big businesses to deploy. A lot of big businesses don't update every 6 months. What they do is they just go from LTS to LTS, which is every couple of years. So the next one, Lucid, is going to be an LTS.
All right. So this is a big one. The next one.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
Karmic was really. Karmic was really brave. I mean, I feel like it was like one of the bravest releases that we've done for a long time. And lots of new, like there was screen sharing, new AV, IM stuff in there, and you know, the cloud support in Ubuntu Server, and you know, improved boot experience, all this kind of stuff. Really, really pushed the fold with Karmic. So
I gotta get online and download it.
Yeah, well, maybe that cool. new laptop that you're going to be on.
Oh, you saw my new laptop, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I'll put Windows 7 on that. No.
Of course, 9.10. What am I thinking? What was I thinking? I could do a dual boot. Actually, I always worry with it that this is a brand new Dell Latitude Z, and I always worry with the newer laptops that the support isn't there yet in Linux.
Generally, I mean, it's you'd be surprised. I mean, Linux will just run on a lot of very modern laptops.
Just out of the box.
It used to be a nightmare. I mean, you used to have to like make sure the planets aligned for it to work. But now it's a lot of it, and particularly with machines that are running with SSDs, disks.
That's what this is. Like, this is an SSD, yeah.
I mean, Ubuntu will be up and running in next to no. It boots way quicker than Windows 7. So
yeah, now you're tempting me. Well, before I put 7 on, I've got Vista.
Give it a go.
I'll put 9.10 on, and we'll see.
Also, you know, if you download the Ubuntu 9.10 Live CD, you can just run it from the CD, try it out without installing anything. Give it a go.
Give it a shot.
Just give it a go.
First one's free. It's easy.
And then we can be friends, Leo.
Oh, I want to be your friend. So I'm going to go to ubuntu.com, and I'm going to download the latest, which is, what is it, Knackered Knickknacks? What is it called?
Karmic Koala.
Karmic Koala.
Yeah.
Wow.
KK.
KKs. Begin download. Oh, I should get the 32-bit, though. I mean, the 64-bit. Shouldn't I?
Is it a 64-bit machine?
Of course it is. What is the latest?
It's an 8-bit machine.
It's an 8-bit machine. No, it is. So how do I get it?
It's an 8-bit machine.
All right. So the big button says 32-bit. So maybe I'll look around and see.
Yeah.
Where to get it?
So give it a go.
64-bit.
And,
yeah. Yeah. Cool. Very cool.
Oh, I just got pinged by Rob. He's still watching the show, and he says that the video feed for Floss Weekly, the Twit
doesn't live work.
Feed, doesn't work.
I know it doesn't work. I know. I've already been told that. I wasn't going to bring it up with Rob. It doesn't work. It's Bitgravity's doing this one. It's a Bitgravity. It's Flash, but I don't know why it wouldn't work.
H.264 SEF V9 bug, whatever that means. So it's probably something to do with
now, there's on live.twit.tv, there's another tab at the bottom for Ustream. I wonder if Ustream works. They're doing, they do a Flash Media Encoder stream, which they repeat. So maybe that one will work. This is a, forget it. I can't. I'm at their mercy. You know, there's nobody provides free streaming with anything else.
Right.
So I'm kind of, I kind of have to do it the way they do it.
Leo, if you hate freedom, it's fine. Don't be embarrassed.
I don't hate freedom. I just. Oh, look! See, Randall left. He just ran out.
He hasn't been paying the bills.
Yeah, click him again. He's in Burbank. That's why.
We used to always rib each other on Lug Radio about, you know, somebody says anything that doesn't slightly 100% agree with someone.
You hate freedom.
You hate us because is that because you hate freedom?
No, I'm all for freedom. I'm the kind of guy that goes to these rainbow gatherings. I love this stuff. I'm a hippie at heart. But I also like getting stuff done. So there's kind of this mix.
You're a pragmatist, yeah. Same.
Yeah, yeah. Got to be a little bit pragmatic. For instance, you know, the minute there's an open source replacement for Skype that will, I wouldn't want. I'm running Windows XP on these machines. It's crazy. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Empathy on Linux is the future, and it's going to be a little while yet, but it's the future.
That's a Skype replacement.
It's basically an AV framework. It uses something called Telepathy, which is a framework for sending data between two things, and then a facility called Farsight. And with it, they've been developing the back end for a long time, and now they're putting it, the front end is called Empathy.
I see.
So now they've got audio and video calling. It traverses NAT, things like that, and screen sharing and things like that. So that's what we shipped in Karmic. That was quite a brave move for us, was to put.
I'm gonna take a look at it.
So yeah, so I mean, it's going to be a while before you can replace all your machines with it, but I'm confident that it will meet the needs meet the quality of Skype in the future.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I'll be glad to replace this, and I think the open source community could do a much better job of this.
But
the other thing is, everybody that we talk to has Skype, or most of them have Skype already.
Yeah.
So there's an advantage there as well, and so forth.
Well, with Empathy, it uses GChat as well. So it uses Google accounts.
Most
so basically, anyone with a Google account. So it's cross-platform.
Well,
so
my new N900 has GChat on it. So
there we go. But like you say, you're a pragmatist. You know, when it works,
it's got to
work. You deploy.
I did order. We'll see if I replace the iPhone, the Nokia N900. Remember, Randall, we talked to the Mimo guy. Mm-hmm. I guess he was being a little cagey because he must have known even then, back in, I think we talked in the spring, about the 900. Yep. So this is Mimo 5, and as soon as it comes, I'll give you a little demo on the show.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Speaking of old shows,
yes.
I want to give a shout out to the guys at Sun for helping me out. We had a bug show up on OpenSolaris up in the cloud, and I was just about ready to give it up because Apache would just freeze after like 6 hours, and that's not good. So I wrote Aaron Newcomb, who has been on the show a couple times, and I said, here's the problem. I've got OpenSolaris, and it's just hanging out. And my client, Neil Bauman, runs this website there, and I can't have it freeze up in the middle of a day. And he actually got me right to the guys inside Sun that are building Solaris and got me a patch for my patch.
Wow.
Patch for my Apache. Here we go. And so I'm up and running solid again. Just want to give a shout out to the guys at Sun for doing that for me, getting it all taken care of, including Aaron for hooking me up. So we're back out live again on OpenSolaris. So we actually have been live for a couple of weeks now using OpenSolaris for InsightCruises.com. And Neil's real happy with it, except for that one little pause of Apache every once in a while. But loving ZFS, too. I've been telling people, if I have kids, I'm going to name them Z, F, and S. That's amazing.
Yeah, and of course, now that Apple has decided not to support it, it looks like we'll have to. Maybe I should put OpenSolaris on this Latitude.
There you go. There you go. That'll be
sorry,
cool.
Sorry, Jonah. Just kidding. It's all right. Just joking.
It's all right.
So I'm just open something, right?
I'll triple boot.
I hate you all.
I hate freedom, so we're even. Yeah.
So speaking of upcoming shows, how's that for a segue? We've got John, why don't you describe next week's guests, Open Rights, talk about what they are.
Oh, is this
Danny O'Brien?
Danny O'Brien. Yeah, sorry, I don't have the calendar in front of me. Yeah, so the Open Rights Group is a organization based in England that is basically kind of like an equivalent to the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They basically go out and they defend digital rights and all that kind of stuff. And Danny O'Brien actually founded this group about 3-4 years ago. In fact, he talked about it at this BBC Open Media conference. And he said, you know, it was kind of a pledge bank thing where they said, you know, if we have, I think it was 1,000 people each agree to pledge £5 a month, then we'll set it up. And they managed to get the 1,000. In fact, I was the first person to pledge. I wasn't the first person to give money, though, because I'm a tight Northern Englishman. And it took them about 3 years to get the fiver out of me, of which I received considerable abuse.
But you did pledge, and that's what counts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I promised to put my money where my mouth was, and I refused to get the money. So, you know, credit where credit's due. But they're doing great work, and Danny's a really fun guy. So cool. I'm looking forward to the show. Great.
And then, of course, on the short list, we have some couple people to talk about BioPearl. Mark Plodier is going to help us host on that show. We've got Wolfgang Meyer coming up talking about the XML-based Exist database. That should be an interesting show. And then there's just some guy that, I don't know, some people in our audience may be familiar with. I think he goes by the name of Chris DeBona.
Maybe Chris DeBona. Yeah,
he's going to come up on a show talking from his perspective at Google.
He was on The Sopranos, right? I think that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's him, right. He plays the short guy with the ponytail. Right, exactly. That narrows it down, right?
Yeah.
And then also on the short list, we've got bunch of amazing guests. Rather than take up time here in the show, if you can go to twitch.tv/floss, and the upcoming show spreadsheet is linked from there, so you can check out all of our upcoming shows. If there's a guest that you want on that's not on that list, have them write me, so I will find out that my address is right there on that same page. You can also tweet me. I'm at twitter.com/Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N. And one reason to be following that is that I am practicing my five-minute talk for not just one Ignite, but two Ignites now. I've just been accepted to Ignite Salem the week before Ignite Portland. So on November 12th, I'll be in Salem, Oregon, talking about karaoke for fun and profit. And then the following week, I'll just use it as like a rehearsal, because the following week I'm also presenting at Ignite Portland. Both of those are going to be videoed and put up on YouTube and stuff, so you'll be able to watch it after the fact. But if you are in the Portland, Salem area, you come see me live and hang out with me and say hi and that sort of stuff. So I'll be practicing that, though, online. I'm doing live demos. So if you watch my Twitter account, I'll be announcing that I'm actually live streaming my practicing session. So get in on that.
Very good. Well, John O'Bacon, Randall Schwartz, thank you for being here. Thank you all for listening, and keep fighting for freedom. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.